And joining us on Perspectives, the book club today, is award-winning author Diana Chamberlain. She's a New York Times bestselling author of The Silent Sister, among others, and the recent is Big Lies in a Small Town. Diane, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, I really appreciate you having me. Thanks, Lou.
So tell us a little bit about, we talked with you before.
Right.
And one of the things that really stood out is how you got the idea for your first novel. You were waiting in a doctor's office. And I know that a lot of us wait a long time in a doctor's office, but you actually, I guess it took a long time to call you, so you wrote a novel.
I at least started it. I'd had an idea in my mind for many, many, many years, but had never put any of the words down on paper. And I was waiting so long in that doctor's office, and I ran out of magazines, but I had a notepad with me, and I had a pen. And I just started writing some of the scenes down, and I got really hooked. And the receptionist, don't you want to reschedule? And I said, no, just leave me alone. So I waited 4 hours, and I did not have a complete novel, but I had a bunch of scenes, and I was really hooked on writing. And that's how it all began. I really sometimes wonder what would have happened if I'd never had that long wait in the doctor's office. Would I still be a social worker? I don't know.
I'm glad you led us right there to you, social worker. Tell us about the line of social work. I know it's not an easy job. You guys are very underpaid, and you work some very long hours and very emotional.
Well, I was very fortunate in the kind of work that I did. I worked primarily in hospitals, and I worked in a maternity unit for a long time, and then I worked in adolescent medicine with teenagers, and it was really wonderful. I absolutely loved working with the medical staff and coordinating our services to help the patients the best we could. And then after that, I had a private practice with teenagers, a private psychotherapy practice, and I loved that too. But at some point, I had to make a decision which career path I was going to follow, because I would write during the day and then see my young patients in the evening. And after a while, it just became impossible to keep up with both. So you can see which career path I chose.
Well, I would imagine that working as a caseworker and working as a psychotherapist, you had your hands full, not just mentally and emotionally, but also you had to write a lot of casework material, correct?
I did. And the funny thing is, when I started writing the novel, it was really dry, because the only writing experience that I had for many years was writing case notes, where you have to be very objective and not at all flowery. And so I really had to figure out how can I move from writing these dry case notes to writing something that's engaging. And what I did was I went to a Jungian analyst, like Carl Jung inspired therapist, who did dream work. And she helped me find my creative side again. And the way it happened was that I would report my dreams to her. And in the beginning, my dreams were all about having a baby that I couldn't take care of, that I didn't have food for, or I would drop it, or just all kinds of things were going wrong with that baby. And she told me that the baby was the novel that I was working on, and that I just didn't quite have my groove down. And then as I worked with her over the course of several months and my writing got better and more creative, I would have dreams where I could take care of the baby, and the baby was thriving. So it was a very interesting process to go from writing those dry case notes to writing an engaging novel.
We're visiting with award-winning New York Times bestselling author Diane Chamberlain, her most recent book, Big Lies in a Small Town. When you just talked about going to a dream therapist and telling him your dreams, explaining what you just told us, I seem to have a recollection. Wasn't one of your books based on something kind of like that?
Well, my last book was called The Dream Daughter, and it actually has some time travel.
Yes, that's it.
And yes, I think that's what you're thinking of. You have a good memory.
Thank you.
So, but that book was very unusual. It's now out in paperback as well as hardcover. And it was about a young woman who learns in 1970 that her baby, the baby she's carrying, is very ill and not going to survive. And then she learned that there is a way that she could travel to the future and get fetal surgery done on her baby. And she does it, and then, of course, everything goes wrong because it's a Diane Chamberlain book.
Well, you had me hooked on that book right from the beginning because you talked about the Beatles. And so I said, well, this can't be so bad. And it was great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, her brother-in-law knew all about what happened to the Beatles later because he was from the future. And so she thought he was crazy in 1970. And so it took her a while to realize that he was telling the truth.
Tell us a little bit about, when you were younger, you were growing up, were you an avid reader and enjoyed writing back then?
Yes, I was a big reader. My father was a school principal, and practically every day he would bring home books for us, books and candy bars. So I always say that we were big readers with bad teeth, which really is kind of true. So I read a lot, and when I was 12, I was sick for about a week, but I wasn't sick in bed. I was just sick enough to stay home from school. And so I hit my father's old Smith Corona typewriter and started typing stories. And then I illustrated them and I stapled them together. And I still have them because when I was cleaning out my parents' house, I found them wrapped in saran wrap that my mother had done to preserve them. So I still have those little books. They're pretty awful, but it was my beginning. And then I put all of that aside for a long time when I went to college and went to grad school and worked on my social work career.
Would it be safe to say that most of your books would be considered, I know genres are something that people just make up because everybody writes about every different thing, but would you consider yourself perhaps being a writer of domestic thrillers?
I would say some of my books fit that category. It is really hard to label my stories. My current book, which is Big Lies in a Small Town, is, I don't know what it is. It's contemporary, but it's historical, and it has a mystery in it. It's not very domestic, so I don't know. It's really a challenge for me ever to label my books, and that's been a problem with my career right from the beginning because bookstores, especially early on, they wanted to know, do we put her in romance? Do we put her in mystery? Do we put her in thriller? So they really never knew where to stick my books. And I obviously still don't know. Would you call them a domestic thriller?
I think some of them would be fit into that category because it involves families and involves some mysteries and a lot of roller coaster rides. But one of them that kind of was different from all the other ones, and I think it's because it deals with the man, and that's The Good Father.
Boy, you are really good at knowing my book. Yes, The Good Father had a male protagonist who was doing his best to raise his young daughter and really making a mess of things in the process. And so that was a very different kind of book to write and definitely had a thriller element to it of how is he going to get out of this bind that he's gotten himself into. And he's a good guy who's making some poor decisions. And ultimately, of course, all of my books have happy endings or very satisfying endings. So we know right from the start that he's going to be safe. But the journey to get him there was really a challenge.
But that's one of the things that you do in your books is perhaps people have an idea of how the book may end, but they really don't know until they reach that last page because you throw so many curves in there that it's like, wow, this is something else. And it's I like the way you go back and forth with a timeline like you did in this book, Big Lies in a Small Town. You go from Anna to Morgan, then back to 2018, then back to 1940. And yet the reader kind of knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm. I hope so. I hope it's, you know, I hope it makes sense to the reader. I do alternate their chapters. So it's their points of view are alternating, and also 1940 and 2018. And the way that I wrote this is I wrote all of Anna's story first. I knew basically what Morgan's story was going to be, but I wrote Anna's first, and then I wrote Morgan's. And I did it that way because I didn't want to lose their point of view. I wanted to really be inside of Anna as I wrote about her, and then be inside of Morgan as I wrote about her. So so then I had the job of putting those two stories together, and I was extremely nervous about it. But when I actually did it, when I sat down and alternated their chapters, I was really surprised to see how well they fit together. I only had to make a few tweaks.
Diane, can you kind of set this up for us without giving away anything about the book? Because we talked about Anna and Morgan, but to let our listeners know, who are these people?
Sure. They're two young women. They're both 22 years old. They're both artists. They are both working on the same mural, but 78 years apart. So Anna won a WPA works program mural competition back in 1940, and she won the competition to paint a mural for a southern town that she was totally unfamiliar with. She grew up in New Jersey. So she goes to the town to try to learn about it and figure out what things she should paint in this mural. And toward the end of the painting of the mural, she actually disappears with the mural. And then in 2018, the mural reappears. And Morgan Christopher is a young 22-year-old woman who attended art school, was not a very good artist, and she's now in prison. She had a DUI where she very severely injured somebody, although we learned pretty quickly that she was not the person responsible, but she's the person who's serving time for it. And two women show up one day when she's in prison, and they tell her that they can get her out of prison if she will come to this town in the South and restore this mural. And it's a very strange request, and there's a lot of mystery surrounding this request. And Morgan knows nothing about restoration, because restoration is a completely different set of skills from creating art. But she's so desperate to get out that she agrees to do it. So as she learns how to restore this mural, she begins to uncover some odd clues in the mural. And she realizes that she learns that Anna had disappeared when she was painting the mural. And Morgan becomes obsessed with trying to figure out what it is that happened to Anna. And as she's uncovering these clues in the mural, she begins to paint a picture for herself of what might have happened to Anna.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author, award-winning author, Diane Chamberlain. Diane is the author of the most recent book, Big Lies in a Small Town. The town itself, is it pronounced Edentown or Edenton?
It's Edenton.
Okay, that's what I kind of... Tell us about when we're introduced to Anna, and she's meeting with the town people. It's a town run by men, but then later on, one of the other persons she meets, she talks about the fact that the Tea Party that is depicted or is talked about is something that the men don't like, because it proves that it's the women who really run the town.
Well, Edenton is a real town in North Carolina. And it's kind of funny, because maybe 5 or 6 years ago, this woman approached me at a signing, and she said she was from Edenton, and that she was sure that if I came to Edenton, I would find a story there that I could write about. And so I went, and she and her friends were really kind to me, and they took me all over the place, and I just got nothing. There was no inspiration. But when I thought about this story about the mural, I thought I could put this in Edenton, and it actually became a really good fit. And Edenton is known primarily for one thing, and that is the Edenton Tea Party. During the Revolution, the women of Edenton signed a petition that they would not buy any British goods. And they were mocked, both in England and the United States, that, oh, these little ladies got together and made this decision. So it's still a very important part of the town of Edenton. And there's a lot of historical markers and a little film and that sort of thing that talks about the Edenton town. Tea party. But I noticed when I was there doing my research, and I mentioned to a gentleman that was helping me with my research that I thought that the main part of the mural should be the Edenton Tea Party, and he sort of shrugged it off, like, oh, that old tea party. So that's what I put in the book, that when Anna is doing her research, she thinks that the Edenton Tea Party should be front and center of the mural, but the men in town kind of shrug it off, and they want her to focus on the industry. So she does put the Edenton Tea Party in, and as you know, when Morgan is doing the restoration and she cleans off that part of the mural, she discovers all sorts of clues to what might have happened to Anna. And that was really fun to do, to figure out how to plant clues in that mural.
Did you have to do a lot of research as far as how a mural is started, how it's painted? Because some people might think, well, you know, somebody just goes up on a wall and starts painting. But the way you described it, the way they unrolled that canvas, and it's almost very suspenseful when they're unrolling it.
I'm glad you think that. Yeah, I did a lot of research on first how the murals of that age were painted, because I am not an artist and I knew nothing about it. And then I met with a woman here who has a restoration company, and she spent the whole day with me. She showed me the tools of her trade, and I happened to see her last night because she came to a speech I was giving, and she had read the book. She'd read an early copy of the book and was laughing over every little thing she had told me. Is now in the book. For example, the person who's guiding Morgan in her restoration says, make sure to take a picture of every step. And that's one of the things that the restoration artist had told me. So I learned a great deal. The problem that I had, the problem any author has when they do a lot of research, is you don't want to put so much into the book that it's boring, where it just gets very dry and too much information. So hopefully I have just enough to let people understand what it is that Morgan's doing without overwhelming them.
Well, I think because of where we live now, social media, everybody Googles everything. I'm sure that as people are reading about the work being restored, that they're going to go out there and Google art restoration, Google anything that has to do with murals and find out a little bit more about that. So I think you piqued their interest in that point as well.
Oh, that's good. Good, because it really is fascinating. I'm thinking so many people have seen these murals but not realize what they are. They're the WPA programs at the end of the Depression were designed to put people back to work. And I always thought that meant laborers, manual laborers, but it also meant artists and writers and people in theater. And so it was artists who were hired to paint these murals in post offices and government buildings. And a lot of them still exist, and many of us grew up seeing them in these buildings and just kind of not thinking very much about them. But it was fun to explore how they came into being.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author, award-winning author Diane Chamberlain. Her latest novel is Big Lies in a Small Town. You told us about going back and forth, the 1940s to 2018. One of the things that also stands out is there is, in a sense, in this town, a good old boy network, and Anna finds that out when she's meeting with them, and then she's kind of a little weirded out, I guess, when Billy, the editor of the newspaper, is using the bad grammar, and she's wondering, what about this? Plus the fact that they're not really happy that she was the one chosen as a winner.
That's true. There's a portrait artist in the town who also entered this competition, and everybody thought he was a natural fit since he lived in Edenton, that he would be the right person to paint the mural. And so when they discover that it's this woman from the north who actually won the competition, there's a lot of bad feelings, a lot of hard feelings, particularly from this artist, but also from all the movers and shakers in town who feel like the local artist should have been the one to win. And in reality, this happened often, that the southern murals were painted by New York artists, and there was a lot of flack in the South about how they got it wrong, how they didn't capture the feeling of the South, or they made the South look bad. So that's what inspired me to have Anna be a northerner coming down. Nobody really wanted her there.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Diane Chamberlain. She is the author of the most recent novel, Big Lies in a Small Town. We keep talking about two artists, Morgan and Anna, but in reality, there are three artists, correct?
Yes.
Are we allowed to say anything about that?
Absolutely. If we're talking about the same artist, which is Jesse.
Yes.
I assume you mean Jesse.
Yes, ma'am.
Jesse Jameson Williams is a famous fictional, in my mind, African-American artist who Anna hires when he's 17 years old to help her with this mural. And she discovers that he is incredibly talented. And so she is the person who encourages his artistic ability. And then he goes on to become a very, very famous artist. And when Morgan is in prison, and this woman comes to tell her that she can get out of prison if she restores this mural, the woman reveals that the woman is actually Jesse Jameson Williams' daughter, and that the mural is going to go into a gallery that he wanted to build before his death. And so he's a big part of the story. And I don't want to give too much away, but he and Anna develop a really strong friendship when Anna is working on the mural and he's helping her. And they kind of save each other in a way. So without giving too much more away, I'll just leave it at that.
And initially, Morgan and Lisa do not really hit it off. In fact, when they're driving away from the prison, Morgan feels very tight, very woundly tied up because of Lisa's attitude. She's afraid to say anything, and it's almost like she feels like Morgan was just thrown on her by force.
Right, right. Lisa, there's something in Jesse's will that keeps Lisa, that makes Lisa have to work with Morgan, and she doesn't want to do it, but she has to. And the interesting thing in my research, I wanted to know what Jesse's life would be like as a black teenager in Edenton, growing up in Edenton. So I met with two African-American men who are in their 80s now, who grew up in Edenton, and I took each of them to lunch separately, and they told me so much about what their lives were like and what Jesse would have faced as a young black boy in Edenton. So that was tremendous and so generous of them to share their stories with me. So it really helped me know what Jesse and his family, because his family becomes important in this story, what they would be like and what they had gone through as farmers in the South.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Diane Chamberlain. Diane's latest book is Big Lies in a Small Town. As far as this novel goes, you talked a little bit about, well, you write about it in the novel, about this deadline that Morgan has to meet, and Lisa says it's very important, and I don't want to give anything away, but later on we find out just why that date is so important.
Right. Yeah, I wanted the pressure on Morgan. I like to make my characters under pressure. I like to make them suffer and then win in the end. And so she is given, Morgan is given 2 months to restore this 12-foot by 6-foot mural that she has no idea how to restore. And there's an important reason that she doesn't understand right away, but it all ties into Jesse's will. And she I can't tell you anymore. I don't want to tell you what actually happens.
We've been visiting with New York Times bestselling author Diane Chamberlain. She is the author of the book Big Lies in a Small Town. Diane, I mentioned some of your other books briefly during our interview, but if listeners want to catch up on some of these other books or find out more about you, do you have a specific webpage?
I do. It's dianechamberlain.com. And they're one of the most helpful things there, I've been told, is that there's a printable book list. So while you can read synopses of all of my books, and usually the first chapter of every book is on the website, there's also this printable book list that you can carry around with you, and you can see if there's any books that are linked. Only a few are linked. And you can check off if you've read one so you don't end up picking up the same book again someplace. So it's a really, really helpful list of books to have, because there are now 27 of them. And my diehard readers love this list, so they don't get confused.
Well, again, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us. We appreciate that very much. Diane Chamberlain, author of Big Lies in a Small Town. Thank you, Diane.
Thank you. And you're a wonderful interviewer.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
The Book Club on Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Sam Cassiano. Our producer is Alex Dominguez. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Science.